Hello and welcome to the Flight for the Human Spirit podcast. I'm Michael Combs. So glad you're here today. Oh man, let me tell you, the last three flight days have been absolutely unbelievable. I think where I left off is we were getting ready to head into Canada and Alaska. Part of the Flight for the Human Spirit has been just adjusting and adapting to whatever comes our way, and certainly the last few days of my personal life have been that way, where it's been unpredictable at best. But let me tell you what happened here. Once I left Eugene, Oregon, it was just a very, very easy flight over Portland and on into Seattle, landed at Boeing Field. It was wonderful because I think one of the highlights of the day, not only Mount Hood and Mount Rainier, but seeing Mount St. Helens. I didn't realize that's what that mountain was until I got around the other side and saw the profile of it that we've all come to see on the news and reports, and then likewise to see the smoke or the steam coming out of it. Boy, fantastic sight. This is just a beautiful area up here. Seattle really is just a beautiful, beautiful town. I met Bob Warner. Actually, I went up and Blue Skies Aviation had offered to change the oil on Hope 1, which I wanted to do before I flew into the northern regions and back. So thank you so much, guys. I tell you, Klaus, I love talking with you and your expertise and your tips on caring for the Rotax were invaluable. But it was just some great people up there at the Arlington Airport in Washington, and I just thoroughly enjoyed that time, and I wish that would have been one of our scheduled stops, because I really, really want to come back. But as it is, it became an official stop because we had to fly up there for the oil change, and afterwards, I flew down for a nice sunset cruise from Arlington to Seattle, which was about a 40-minute flight or so. I met up with Bob Warner. We had dinner that night at a little local restaurant called Randy's, and then the next morning, bright and early, we were at the airport ready to go. The flight from Boeing Field to Vancouver was just beautiful. Flew over so many of the islands that dot the Northwest Pacific coast, and it was just a great experience to see these places that we'd heard about but not actually seen, and to see them from the air was even better. Landed at Vancouver, got through customs, and I have to say, getting through Canadian customs is really an easy process. The key to get through U.S. and Canadian customs is very simply to do your homework ahead of time. Bob had arranged all of that and had taken that part of the flight into his own realm. And Bob, I thank you for that, because it made my life a lot easier, so I could just concentrate on the flying side and to make sure that I concurred on weather briefings and things like that. So it made that part a lot easier. But it was really very simply a phone call to customs. They gave us a clearance number and off we went. Had they wanted to inspect the plane or us for our credentials, we had everything, more than everything, ready. So we were ready for any type of inspection. So I guess that looked good to them. Onward from Vancouver to Kamloops, British Columbia, and first of all, Vancouver is a beautiful town. I can't wait to go back and spend some time there. The architecture reminded me so much of so many pictures that I've seen of European towns, and just the setting with the mountains to the east and the ocean on the west was very, very picturesque. Flying right over those mountains on into Kamloops, I mean, they were just immediately majestic mountains. I mean, they were just unbelievable, the vertical nature of those mountains, as well as the rocky faces and the steep sheer cliffs. We flew over the town of Hope, and it was great because Michelle wanted us to do that, and so it was very fitting that we should fly over Hope and then make our turn towards Kamloops. Flew into Kamloops. Actually, the weather was very warm. Bob was questioning his clothing choices, and I will have Bob on another podcast. He did have to leave me to go to a seminar, so unfortunately, Bob won't be here on this one, but I will meet up with him either by phone or in person, and we'll do another podcast to share some of his thoughts of this adventure that's now behind us. From Kamloops, we checked the weather once again, and the forecast was for light rain at Prince George, which was about 211 nautical miles away. So we knew that we had to be cautious, but the ceilings were forecast to be high enough that we would be able to fly in. And sure enough, we got to a small airport or a small town called Williams Lake, which is about 100 miles, about an hour away from Prince George. And we started to see the clouds come in. And for that last hour, believe me, my friend, we were weaving around storms or flying through the lighter of the storms that we could find. It was an unusual and interesting experience. We didn't realize how bad some of these storms can be until I tuned in the radio at Prince George and was listening in. Because I wanted to see if we needed to go back and stay on the ground or wait. And there was an airline, a 737, that had to make 3 attempts to land because of the winds that were so strong. What's interesting about the winds there is the skies were very, very calm except around the storms. And I know that's not completely unusual with weather. And certainly what I've experienced flying, particularly through the southern and southeastern part of the country. But these were more turbulent than what I've experienced before. It was very interesting. The atmosphere was very alive and very active. We got bounced around pretty good. And that wasn't bad. It was, as we talked afterward, it seemed like the biggest concern was what the weather was going to be like when it came time to land. But we had plenty of fuel, so we could have flown back to Williams Lake or just hung out in the sky until that passing storm had gone through. As Prince George began to come into view, we saw that the town itself, the city, was actually lit up by the sun, which gave us a lot more comfort. So we got through that storm, landed at Prince George, and actually the winds at the time were forecast to be gusting to 35, but in actuality, they were at 3 and no gusts. So it was just a very nice landing. We had a nice, warm welcome at Prince George Airport. And Robin from the Airport Authority and the group from AvConsole, I thank you so much for making us feel so welcome. Right off the bat. Now, Michelle found out later that the hangar that AvConsole had been working out of burned completely to the ground last December. And in talking with the two partners there, they lost everything in that fire. So it's good to see that resilience, the human spirit, fighting back once again to make that business grow to where it once was. And believe me, they're doing a fantastic job. We were particularly thankful for the fact that they let us use their courtesy van for the entire weekend. And it ended up to be the weekend. We were hopeful to leave the next morning, but we already had heard that the forecast was for rain and low clouds. Now, this was the interesting thing is, when we talked to John King to plan our route, he and every other pilot that I have talked to about flying into Canada said the exact same thing. And it was very simple. Be patient. And that's good advice for whatever we do in life, right? But I understood that wisdom as we were watching the weather patterns and trying to determine our route. You have to just get on the ground and wait until the weather's good, and you do not push it. I talked to several local pilots there. They said the same thing. You just stay here, and you just don't push it. And it's a little bit different than flying south of the jet stream, where the weather patterns can change a little bit more quickly. We ended up spending 3 days in Prince George as we waited for the weather to clear. And basically what happened is the weather forecast and actuality were a little bit different at times. One day it was forecast to be sunny, and we got up bright and early and took a look outside, and it was forecast to be 2,000-foot ceilings for the entire day, and that's just kind of how it is there. 2,000 feet was not going to work for us. We needed a minimum of 6,500 in order to fly east. The original plan was to fly eastward to the other side of the valley, to fly through or over those mountains, and then on a northward course into the Yukon territory, fly into a town called Whitehorse, and then downward on a southwesterly track to Juneau, or if the weather was permissible, fly directly into Ketchikan, which was only about a 350-mile flight from Prince George. So we had two ways that we could go into Alaska, and as you know, for the Flight for the Human Spirit, we just need to touch down in all 50 states. We don't need to tour all those states. We just need to touch down at least at one airport in each of the 50 states. So we had our choice of either Ketchikan or Juneau, and we just kept watching those routes and watching the weather over and over and over again. Finally, the night before we were going to fly, we looked at the weather once again, and it looked like that westerly track into Ketchikan was going to open up. And I mean open up wide. We had a 1.5-day window to land in either Ketchikan or Juneau. And if we had missed that window, then it was going to be at least another 5 days before that window would open up. And likewise, the weather to the east still was not good enough for us to fly. So in looking at it, we made the determination that, yeah, Ketchikan looks like we're going to be able to get in there and at least go one way and fly out the next morning. We woke up that next day, and the forecast again was the same. It looked beautiful. Winds were very light. We're going to fly over some very rugged, my word is formidable, mountain ranges, and so winds were key to make sure that we weren't going to get bounced around or have any problems in that regard flying Hope One. It worked out perfectly. It worked out amazingly perfectly. We took off to partly cloudy skies in Prince George, and those became clear skies. The plan was to fly into, or at least over, the town of Terrace, which is down in a bowl surrounded by 5,000 to 6,000 foot peaks. So it's a pretty good drop to, I believe the elevation there was 700 feet, so it was a pretty good drop to get into that area. When we flew through, though, the fuel had been so well, the fuel burn had been so low that we started looking at our next stop, which was Prince Rupert, and that area was fogged in, so we had the choice of either landing at Terrace or flying onward to Ketchikan. And our fuel burn was so good, the winds were so perfect, we just flew directly into Ketchikan. So we did a 300-and-some-mile leg in one flight, and man, beautiful. I know I'm looking at some of the pictures that I posted on Facebook, and they're just absolutely gorgeous. I don't know what to say. I mean, I'm speechless, literally, because these mountains were so beautiful. They had ice flows. We did see a glacier as we were flying through. I mean, it was just an incredible, incredible experience to see those mountains from the air. Flying into Ketchikan was a fantastic experience. Ketchikan Airport is on one side of the channel. The town is on the other. And the airport, I tell you, was very interesting. I mean, it's has prevailing winds in one direction as the winds come out through this little valley area. And it was more used as a seaplane base than a land-based airport. So actually, as we were coming in, there was a seaplane coming in to land on the water down below where we were. It was great. So the winds were so nice. And I tell you, I think I was going about 40-some miles an hour when I touched down, because the winds were so prevalent straight down that runway. I had my choice of landing anywhere I wanted, and I think you could have put a washcloth there, and I could have touched that. It was that precise, the way those winds were. It was just perfect. We had a wonderful welcome in Ketchikan, Alaska. My friends in Ketchikan, I know you're listening, and I just thank you so much for helping us to feel so welcome, and just celebrating that moment with Bob and I. Believe me, as you know from talking with us as we've been flying around and from listening to these podcasts, Alaska was a big, big piece of this puzzle. And to touch down in Alaska was fantastic. I talked to Michelle as I got out of the aircraft, and she said she had cried like a baby. And boy, I tell you, it was, I think I probably would have done the same, but we weren't prepared. Our bladders weren't prepared for a three hour plus flight, and we had to wait by the airplane until customs arrived. So I think that took my mind off of crying or emotions. But it was such an overwhelming experience to be there. Aero Services there at Ketchikan filled our tank, and I appreciate that, my friends. Thank you so much. And likewise, the airport treated us to a nice meal, and I thank you guys for just, boy, it was just a great, great experience to be there. Well, then it was time to head back. Off we went. We took off, and we had to go through Canadian Customs at Prince Rupert Airport. We found out when we were in Ketchikan that Prince Rupert Airport does not have fuel. That's true. They do not have avgas there. So we landed, and it's my thought that Prince Rupert was not a favorite of the family, and that's why he got this airport and the area there. It was just very interesting. There was not a lot there. People were non-existent. There was one guy to tell us that they had no fuel and where the phone was, and that was it. Michelle had told me later that they had told the press not to come because there was no food or fuel there. So they even told the media not to come and to not cover our landing. So Prince Rupert, you're on the map as an official stop for the Flight for the Human Spirit. Your airport has gone down in history now, but I wish somebody would have been there to see that. It was just sad. Likewise, we flew onward from there to Terrace Airport. And that was the one that was down in the bowl. We definitely needed to make sure we had fuel. Those winds that had helped us to fly to Ketchikan one way were now working against us, and so we were burning extra fuel on the way back. So we landed in Terrace, which was fun. I tell you, the interesting part was just flying out of there. There was no way that Hope One was going to climb straight up into a place where it could cross a 7,000-foot peak level. So we did some circling and winding and made our way back up into a good cruisable range back towards Kamloops at that point. We had to descend down below the cloud level, and yes, there were those rain showers once again. What had been forecast to be a perfectly clear day was now scattered rain showers and low ceilings. And by low ceilings, I mean they were around 4,000 feet or so, which still gave us plenty of room to cruise over that valley floor. One interesting thing that happened is we felt a little vibration in the engine, and I didn't really think about it at the time because we were flying through some moist air, and it ended up to be a carburetor icing problem. So applying carburetor heat the next day took any fear of that away, as those temperatures were down around freezing. Landed back in Prince George. We were very, very tired, but glad to be there because we were definitely on the place. We were at the place where we could reach back home to the U.S. Lower 48 states in a day if the weather was good, and it was the next day. Wednesday, we woke up. The sky was perfectly clear. It was just a beautiful, beautiful day all around. We got to the airport. We checked out Hope One very carefully to make sure that there were no other problems or concerns. And off we flew to be safe, just to make sure that we had had the proper diagnosis of the aircraft. We circled over the airport, and I just climbed up to about 7,500 feet or so. And it was running just perfectly well, as it has been all along. Off we flew towards Kamloops, and we got to, again, Williams Lake, and had to go down below the cloud deck that was starting to close in below us. And I tell you, it was fun because you could see forever under those clouds. No rain, it was just cloudy, just overcast, and it just gave us a nice perspective on that that wonderful valley floor that we had been flying so high above before. I saw a few bear as I was flying, which was fun. They were in a meadow together. And Bob, this was about 20 minutes later, started to count. He counted up to 14. And he said he counted 14 bears. And I looked over, and there was one that was brown with a white head. I've never seen a brown bear with a white head before. It ended up to be a herd of 14 cattle. So he had a good laugh about that. When I get him on here, we're going to ask him about the bear cattle that he saw as well. the Hereford Grizzlies. Anyway, from Kamloops, we checked the weather, talked to customs, made our arrangements, and it was going to be a nonstop flight back here to Seattle. The briefer gave us a route, which we had several choices. There was rain in the forecast and along the route for several ways that we could go, but he said to fly through this canyonous area, that the tops would be about level with the mountaintops. The cloud ceiling would be level with the mountaintops and allow us just some beautiful, beautiful views as we were flying. And boy, unbelievable. I've shot a lot of video and took a lot of pictures, and I tell you, I will share those as time goes on, as I have more time, because it was just incredible, the scenery that we flew through. If you ever have the chance to visit that British Columbia region that we were flying in from Vancouver over to Prince George, do that. It would make a fantastic vacation, and the scenery is worth it well enough. Onward we flew out of that valley into the sunshine, where we saw Vancouver, made our turn to the left, and within minutes we were inside of U.S. airspace and flying onward on a southward course towards Seattle. And Bob found I-5, and so we just followed I-5 down. We had to duck again below the clouds, and then, of course, flying in here to stay under the Class Bravo airspace and to get to Boeing. We were flying about 1,800 feet, and they brought us in on a north-to-south approach to the runway, which gave Bob a fantastic view of that Seattle skyline. I mean, we flew right over the sporting complex and then turned south and lined up to the runway. So Bob, I want to see some of those pictures because they have to be fantastic. Here we are in Seattle. I am so happy to report that Michelle made it here last night. I haven't seen Michelle for well over a month, and this was very welcome to see Michelle here. And one thing I noticed for hours afterwards is both of us kept letting out long, deep sighs. And it was a part of our life that was one where not only did we miss each other, but we knew that element of danger was there. And you hate to say that I hope to see you again, but certainly that's what we were thinking, is there's so many elements and so many variables to flying this mission, and for us to be back together again is just a wonderful, wonderful treat. From here, believe it or not, the route for the Flight for the Human Spirit is almost finished for what will be 49 states now. Alaska was state number 48, so we still have 49 to land at, which is Idaho. So the plan here is to leave Seattle, fly to the Portland, Oregon area, get back on a reverse route, which will take us to Yakima, Spokane, and then to Missoula, Montana. And then from Missoula, Montana, the next day we will fly to Boise, Idaho, which will be the end of the scheduled route. And Boise, Idaho will mark the 49th state that Hope One has landed in. After that, we've got to fly Hope One down to Lake Havasu City, Arizona, where on the 25th they're having a fantastic air show. If you're in that area, come to Lake Havasu City. See Hope One. You'll get to talk to me, and we'll just have a great time together, believe me. So they've got some amazing things lined up for this air show. So if you have that opportunity, come on down. After that, there's just one more state to get to, and that is Hawaii. We're already working on that, and I will continue to work on that. As far as we've flown in Hope One, I'm not worried about getting to Hawaii. I'm really not. It's just a question of putting that piece of the puzzle together. It's either going to be an air carrier, a cargo carrier that steps up and says, yeah, a shipping carrier that steps up and says, yeah, or we will raise the money ourselves and pay to have Hope One shipped over, or we will have some company step up and say, yes, I want to be a part of this project, and put their name on the tail of Hope One for all of future generations to see. So it's going to be one of those ways that Hope One will get to Hawaii and back. So, and I'm not worried one way or the other. My mind is becoming more free as time goes on to realize, as I'm realizing that we're almost there with this project, and that's just a wonderful place to be. But I will share that with you when we land in Boise or shortly thereafter. So after Boise, we'll probably just spend the night there, and then Michelle and I will cruise on down. I think it'll take about 2 days to get to Lake Havasu City, and we'll get Hope One all cleaned up and have a nice little celebration with you on one of our future podcasts to come. We do have some great episodes coming up. I have some amazing things to share that are really going to touch your heart, and I have been saving some of those until later, only because I know that most people like to listen in on the latest news of the flight, and the next few podcasts obviously will be that, but stay tuned. This flight is not over. It is not over. Even after Honolulu, we have some things planned. It's one of these projects that's reaching out and touching people in a deep, deep way, and I am completely amazed at some of the stories that I've heard from people who have been touched by this flight for the human spirit. So for now, there's your update from our Canada flight. I will get Bob on here, believe me, and we'll have a good time talking about his viewpoint of the flight, and what an honor it was to fly with Bob Warner, believe me. I tell you, I am getting more and more excited as I think about where we're heading and how much we've accomplished. I will sit down and look at the official miles, but we have to be just right around 21,000 miles flown in that little Remos light sport aircraft. Fantastic accomplishment, and it's great to look back now and see how many people didn't think that it was possible, and just to know that, yeah, it is possible, and we did it. So thank you so much for following along. I'll let you go for now. Remember, if I can fly, what can you do? Remember, you don't have to fly an airplane. I just heard the story of a 79-year-old man that bought a new motorcycle and rode to the West Coast because of this flight. So it doesn't have to be aviation-oriented. Whatever your dream is, I want you to promise yourself and promise me that you're going after that dream with all of your heart, mind, and soul, okay? It will come true. It has to. Until next time, take care of yourself, and I'll see you in the sky.